Good morning. So for our final lecture, we'll discuss asymptotics. So we often want to know the we want to understand the behavior of functions when the argument of the function is large or small. So often we want to know the behavior of special functions, but what I'm going to tell you about today is more general than that and has broader applications and can also be used to understand the solutions of differential equations for large or small values of the arguments. So start out by describing what I mean by an asymptotic series. And then we'll look at a few, we'll spend the rest of the lecture discussing the most important technique for deriving asymptotic series. And we'll first look at a simple example, Stirling's approximation. So Stirling's approximation is an approximation to the gamma function for large real values of the argument. And it's particularly simple because it's a real integral. We'll often want to apply the same methods to contour integrals. And so I'll then discuss how to generalize this. The method of Stirling's approximation to general contour integrals. Okay. So before I define what an asymptotic series is, I just want to return to an integral that you saw in your Gaussian integration tutorial last week, which is a good example because this is, you can think of this as a zero-dimensional path integral for lambda phi to the fourth scalar field theory, which you'll learn about in a few weeks in your quantum field theory courses. So you saw one way to evaluate this integral in your Gaussian integration course, but let's just look at something else we can do to try to evaluate this integral. So what I can do is I can Taylor expand the e to the minus lambda x to the fourth in lambda. And if I do that, I just get an infinite series here. And now you know how to evaluate each of the terms in this series. So if we can switch the order of summation and integration, you can use the techniques you learned about in Gaussian integration to evaluate this. So let's do that. So this we can evaluate using the techniques you learned in that course, or alternatively, this is related to the gamma function. We can do a change of variables, u equals x squared, and then this integral is equal to integral from 0 to infinity, e to the minus u to the 2n minus a half du, which is just gamma of 2n plus a half. Okay. So let's plug that back in to our result here. So if we do that, z of lambda is the sum from n equals 0 to infinity minus 1 to the n lambda to the n over n factorial gamma of 2n plus a half. Okay, so let's think about our answer for a minute. Gamma of 2n plus a half is approximately 2n factorial if n is large. So 2n factorial is a two gamma of 2n plus 1. Which is approximately 4 to the n times n factorial squared. So for large n, this wins. The gamma function wins over n factorial. So this is not a convergent series. The step where we've switched the order of summation and integration converted the convergent series we had for e to the minus lambda x to the fourth into what's known as an asymptotic series. So this doesn't converge. As we take more and more terms, the terms get larger and larger. And it's not a convergent series, but that doesn't mean it's useless. In fact, this technique of switching the sum and integral is something that we do all the time in quantum field theory and quantum mechanics. So this better be well defined or we're in trouble. So this is not a convergent series, but it is what's known as an asymptotic series. So there is a sense in which this sum describes a series, but it's not equal to the series. So we should write it's asymptotic to the series. And yes, Jason.
Where did we go wrong? Like, how did we get a not converged series?
The step where we switch the sum and the integral.
Oh, okay, great.
So that.
Because we're taking it to infinity?
But that's right.
Wasn't it a legitimate step? You can, in principle, do it without.
Not in general, no. If it were finite sum, then we could do it, but not if it's a series.
Oh. And how do you get the second approximation for the mean and factorial squared?
So we can see that we have a factor of n factorial in this. So the first two. 2n times up to n plus 1. And so it's easy to see that this is bounded. This is greater than, we can pull out a factor of 2 from each of these, and we're left with an n factorial. With a little more work, you can improve this bound and show that it's actually pretty close to this. Yes.
And if we're switching something that converges to something that doesn't converge, what is the use of the asymptotic series for functions?
So basically, an asymptotic series provides information about a function as lambda goes to zero. So as I'll make some definitions in a minute, but basically, since these two functions are asymptotic, the difference gets small as lambda goes to zero.
So for the analysis you made before, saying that the gamma of 2n plus 1 half wins through the factorial there is in the series, It's independent of the value of lambda, right? But if I choose lambda to go to zero as fast as the gamma function goes to infinity,
right,
then it is legitimate to make the change between the sum and the integral.
So switching the sum and the integral still gives you an asymptotic series, which I'll define just in just a minute. It doesn't necessarily give you a convergent series. You can come up with some examples where it does, but it's not guaranteed to give you a convergent series.
So this result that you've got in is not in fact the value of z.
No, it's not an equation. It is an asymptotic relation. And let me define what I mean by an asymptotic relation. So let's write down some definitions. So first of all, we say that a function f is much less than another function g as x goes to x naught. So this is equivalent to saying that the limit as x goes to x naught of f over g is 0. So this is definition one. Second definition. So say that a function f is asymptotic to a function g as x goes to x naught if f minus g is much less than g. Or equivalently, the limit as x goes to x naught of f over g is 1. So that's what we mean by asymptotic, but this is a sum. So we actually mean something slightly more precise than this. And we say that a function is asymptotic to a series as x goes to x naught. This means that if y minus a finite sum is much less than x minus x naught to the n as x goes to x naught for all n. So that's what we've done up there. It derives an asymptotic series. So the difference between the left and the right-hand side of that equation is smaller than x to the n, if we just take the first n terms for any n. So let me just pause here and point out some of the differences between convergent and asymptotic series and some important points about asymptotic series. So first of all, we know convergent series become better approximations as we take more and more terms. Asymptotic series generally don't. Often asymptotic series become worse approximations after a certain point. So there's generally some finite n which provides the best approximation for some finite value of the argument lambda. So asymptotic series don't necessarily become better as we take more terms. They do become better as we take x closer to x naught. So as we take smaller and smaller lambda, we get a better approximation to z of lambda up there. Although the approximation, say if we're interested in lambda equals 0.01, the approximation with, say, 5 terms could be better than the approximation with 50 terms. Second, an asymptotic series two different functions can have the same asymptotic series. So an asymptotic series doesn't uniquely define a function. So in particular, let's suppose we have some asymptotic series. Then the asymptotic series for f of lambda plus e to the minus 1 over lambda will have the same asymptotic series as lambda goes to 0 in both cases. So we've added here a function that goes to 0 faster than any power of x, so it's not going to show up in the asymptotic series. And So this is an example of what's known as a non-perturbative function. So spend the first few months of the year learning about perturbative techniques in quantum field theory. In the second half of the year, we might come back to non-perturbative functions. So for instance, quantum tunneling is a non-perturbative effect. And if we try to understand quantum tunneling using perturbative techniques, we're doomed to fail because it's not going to show up in any asymptotic series. And one other point about asymptotic series for complex arguments. So if f is asymptotic to G, as Z goes to Z naught for complex C, this is generally only valid if we approach Z naught from certain directions in the complex plane. And this is what's called Stokes' phenomenon. So,
what are A and B?
A and B are constants.
Angles.
Yeah, we can think of these as angles.
Yeah, but I mean, I can take any pair of angles and that satisfies that and it works.
No. So depending on the A and B will depend on the functions. Okay. So I said at the beginning that the most useful technique for deriving asymptotic series is starting from an integral. So let's derive an asymptotic series for the gamma function. So what we want is gamma of n plus 1, or n factorial, for large real n. Okay, so we saw on Friday an integral representation for the gamma function. it's just the integral of e to the minus t, t to the x. Now, this integrand is small both at 0. So t to the x is small if t is small. And it's small for large values of t. So this will this exponential term will win for large t. So there's only some small region that's going to contribute significantly to this integral. And that's the essence of the approximation we're going to make, is that we can just concentrate on the integrand in a small region around the maximum of the integrand. So before we make that approximation, it's useful to make a change of variables. So t is wx. And if we do that, we get a prefactor and xw minus natural log of w. And let's call this function w minus log of w f of w.
Is it okay to make that substitution? Because before t was an independent parameter that varied independently of x, but now when you're making the substitution, you're making t dependent on x?
Right. Yeah, so for any value of x, this is okay. Right. We can say we might only be interested in this gamma of x plus 1 for some particular large value of x.
Yeah, but previously t was independent of x, like in the original.
X is just a constant.
Pardon?
X is just a constant.
Just think it as a really large number. Just
number.
T equals 2w or something.
Okay.
It has a partial differentiation.
Okay.
Okay, so now. The point of this change of variables is so we can put everything nicely in the exponent. And so we see that the integrand is going to be large only when f is small. So we want to basically expand f around its minimum value. And we can approximate the integral by the integrand and integral in a small region of the integrand near its maximum value. So to do that, we note that f prime of w is just 1 minus 1 over w. And this is 0 at w equals 1. So we can expand f around its minimum as 1 plus 1 half w minus 1 squared plus higher order terms. And if we plug that back in to expression for gamma, we get x to the x plus 1, e to minus x can be brought out, And we're left with e to the minus x over 2 w minus 1 squared plus dot, dot, dot. Now, so far, we haven't made any approximations. But now we're set up to make some approximations. And do two things. So first of all, we can drop these dot, dot, dot terms because they are small. And secondly, we can extend the range of integration. So we started out with an integral from 0 to infinity, but only a small region around w equals 1 will contribute to the integral. So if we extend it from the range of integration from 0 to infinity to minus infinity to infinity, we're just picking up a small contribution, the integral from minus infinity to 0. So now this is an integral you all know how to do. And you do the integral, you just get x to the x plus 1, e to the minus x times root 2 pi over x. So if we wanted to keep more terms, we'd have to do the same thing we did before. To evaluate the integral, we'd have to swap the summation and integration. And what we would get is gamma of x plus 1 over root 2 pi x to the x plus 1/2 e to the minus 1/2 asymptotic 1 plus 1 over 12x as x goes to infinity.
Okay. When you neglect the dots, the first approximation is because you're expanding around w smaller than 1, right? So that the next terms are still smaller. Okay.
That's right. So the argument is that the integrand is maximized when w is 1.
So you're expanding around a little distance from 1.
That's right. So the if we look at the integrand e to the minus x f versus of w versus w, it's large only around w equals 1. And so we're basically just looking at approximating the integral by the integral in some region around w plus 1. OK, so we see that what we get is an asymptotic series, not for just gamma of x plus 1. We have a few factors that we have to take out before we get an asymptotic series. And that's generally what will happen when you use analogs of this technique. OK. So let's see how to generalize this to contour integrals. Most of the special functions we've talked about don't have real integral representations, but they do have contour integral representations. So it's useful to be able to generalize this method for more general types of integrals. And so that's it's known as the method of steepest descent. Or the saddle point method. Okay. So we want.
Could you explain how you get the line on the top of the board on the left again?
This?
The right side.
The right side. So this one is what we just showed. So I've just moved those terms over to the left. This 1 over 1 plus 12x is what we would get if we kept the cubic term in the Taylor expansion of f. And we could get higher terms by keeping, say, the quadratic or higher order terms. And I'll explain in the more general case. We'll explicitly calculate some of those higher order terms. See how that works. Okay. So the type of problem we're interested in solving is finding the approximate values of I of z for large real z, where I is given by some contour integral of a function g times e to the z f of w. And okay. So based on our experience with the previous problem, we might expect that the dominant contributions to this integral come when from a region near point W naught, at which the real part of F has a local maximum. So and I'm going to denote the real part of f as u, so I'll be referring to it frequently.
And as well on the function g.
G?
Yeah.
So
it should be the maximum of set f minus logarithm of g, right?
That's right. So in general, there's nothing that would prevent g from competing with f of w, with this exponential term. Right? You could certainly come up with examples, but
I was probably looking at with the gamma function, where in this case your f would be a minus one, and minus one, its local maximum is minus one.
Right. But in practice, often this function can vary very slowly. Very slowly compared with this exponential. So if you come up with, so this would have to vary extremely rapidly in order for it to compete with f. So that's certainly not the only possibility, but in practice that's the case that comes up. Okay. So this is not enough, though. In particular, this is a complex integral. So if the imaginary part is varying rapidly near such a point W naught, which the real part has a local maximum, then the contributions with different phases can cancel. So that's something we need to check as well. And I'll call the imaginary part of f of w. Let's try to formulate this a little more precisely. So let's denote by t hat the tangent vector to the curve C at W naught. So what we want is that the gradient of U dot t hat is 0 if we want u to be a local max. Secondly, we want gradient of v dot t to be 0 for the phase to be stationary. And finally, we have that grad u dot grad v is 0 by the Cauchy-Riemann equations. Okay. So here we've come up with three equations that tell us these three vectors are all orthogonal, but we're only in a two-dimensional space. So that's, it's only possible to satisfy these equations if at least one of these vectors is 0. So we're not interested in a 0 tangent vector. So either grad u is 0 or grad v is 0. And I suppose grad u is 0, then we have and let's denote the real and imaginary parts of w by x and y.
Sorry, is this truly defined as holomorphic?
Can you repeat that?
Is this truly defined as holomorphic?
Yes. So we have that partial u, partial x and y are both 0. But you know that that implies that partial v, partial x and y also have to be 0. So together, these equations imply that the derivative of f evaluated at w naught has to be 0. So this integral is going to be dominated when w naught is a critical point. So this is true at the point W naught. We also are going to be interested in the behavior near the point W naught. So near W naught, we still want the phase to be stationary. So we still want this to be true in some small region along the path. So that means that grad U will be parallel to T, which gives us the name of the method. So this is the steepest descent. And so U has no local maxima in the complex plane. It can have a maximum along the path. So that's where it gets the other name. So it's a saddle point. This point is called the saddle point. Okay. So now we can try to generalize what we did before with the gamma function and expand f in a neighborhood. General, the expansion will look like this because we're at a critical point. There's no first order term. So we just get a second order term, a zeroth order term, and higher order terms. Okay, so it'd be useful to break this up. The second derivative up into a phase, e to the I delta, and its absolute value. Okay. So, we're interested in approximating the integral by the integral in a small region around the maximum value of the integrand. And so we can linearize the contour near W naught. And so we can say that along that part of the path, the W is given by W naught plus some phase times a real variable T. And it's in some small region, say, for minus epsilon, minus T1 to T1. So what we want is that f of w to be equal to f of w naught minus 1/2 t squared times some real number. So that this, if it has this form, then we're at a local max along a path. And if we compare our two forms, we see that this gives us a condition on the angle that the path has to pass through W naught. And explicitly, that is, compare this term here, W minus W naught squared e to the I delta naught. And we plug in our equation for the linear part of the path, we get e to the 2 I phi t squared. We still have this factor here, e to the I delta. And we want this to be equal to what we have here, which is minus t squared. So this determines the angle. And so we see that 2 e to the 2 I phi e to the I delta naught is equal to e to the plus or minus I pi. And so this determines the path up to a plus or minus sign, which will be determined by global conditions. So let's put together what we've learned so far. So I of z approximation gives us e to the z f naught. So that's just a constant we can pull out. Times an integral over a small region, minus t1 to t1, g of w naught plus e to the I phi t, e to the minus z over 2, t squared, f double prime of w naught dt, plus a term coming from change of variables from w to t. And so these limits come from the fact that we're approximating the contour by a linear path in a small region around W naught. OK, so Now, what we can do is we can Taylor expand G and extend the limits plus or minus infinity. Write this as e to the z f naught integral minus infinity to infinity, because most of the contribution will come from t approximately 0, g of w naught plus higher order terms. So if we have a
of G.
Yeah. So it could be there, but if it is there, then we have an odd integral.
Oh, okay. Got
it. Good. Okay. So again, this is an integral we know how to do. So we can do the Gaussian integrals, and we'll get something like this. Okay, so this takes the form of an asymptotic series with some prefactor, as we saw before in the case of Stirling's approximation. So one point to keep in mind is that we've been a little bit sloppy here. So these dot, 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 refer to higher order terms in G. Is that all that there should be? Is there anything else we've forgotten?
Higher order terms in F?
F, right. So we're, since e to the f will vary faster than g for most functions, g and f, certainly comes with counterexamples, but most functions, e to the f will vary faster. We can usually take several terms in here before we have to worry about higher terms in f, but they are there in principle. So the full asymptotic series would have higher terms in both g and f, but for most practical purposes, we can just use this. Okay, so this has been slightly abstract, so let's look at a concrete example of how we can use this to approximate functions. Let's look at the Hankel function. which is a linear combination of the Bessel functions of first and second kind. And you can show that it has a contour integral representation. Where the contour is in the second and fourth quadrants. And stays inside of the regions between minus pi and pi. I'm not going to derive this. In tutorial this afternoon, you'll see one example of how to derive such contour integral representations for special functions, and you'll learn more about deriving integral representations to differential equations and next week, later in the week, in your integral transform and Green's function class. So, our starting point is such an integral representation, which we'll learn more about later.
So, is that a particular contour, or does it just have to satisfy that it's bounded like that, and that it passes through the origin?
It just has to, it has to be in this contour, passing through the origin. In this region between zero, minus pi, and passing through the origin, and then in for negative imaginary parts, it has to be between zero and pi.
Okay, it's kind of like the cot of x over 2 curve?
Yes, yeah, that could work. Yeah. Okay. So, how can we approximate this for large real Z? Okay, so we compare what we have here to what we started with before. We can identify the functions f and g. And so here, we can write g of w as e to the I nu w, and f of w as I cosine w. So this is an exponential function, but it doesn't have a z in it. So the fact that we're interested in large real z means that this part should vary more quickly than this part, even though this is still exponential. And then to use our formula, we need the derivatives of f, which are easy to compute in this case. So we see here that there are actually infinitely many critical points. So at any w equals to n pi for n an integer, the derivative of f is 0. But only one of these critical points is actually relevant for our contour. So we see that there's a critical point here, here, and here. And so our contour already passes through a critical point So we don't need to deform it at all. And we can't deform it without to pass through any other additional critical points without altering the value of the integral. So we're only interested in W0 equals 0. So then we can evaluate second derivative of f at W naught. That just gives us minus I, or e to the minus I pi over 2. And so we can figure out the angle that our contour has to pass through this critical point in order for analysis to be valid. And so the path angle satisfies e to the minus I pi over 2 times e to the 2 I phi is to be equal to e to the plus or minus I pi. And so we can solve this equation, and we get two solutions, either minus pi over 4 or 3 pi over 4. But we see that our contour is going in this direction. So the relevant solution here is minus pi over 4. So this angle here, the angle here should be pi over 4 if we're linearizing it in some small region around here. Okay. And from here, our work is basically done, and we can read off the asymptotic expansion for the Hankel function. So let's put it results in this formula. We just get e to the I pi nu over 2 over pi, these prefactors, root 2 pi over z. E to the iz, e to the minus I pi over 4. 1 plus nu I over 2z. And this is valid as z goes to infinity. Okay. Yes.
The first one, in the formula right there, isn't there an e to the I pi missing? And the upper
which
board. And the asymptotic expansion of I offset.
Okay. Where?
Is there some global to the I pi factor and the I mean, because if
here?
Outside if you see there is an e to the I pi dt in the integral before.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I guess there should be one outside and one for the second derivative of g.
Okay.
Stuff like that, right? Or I'm missing.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm missing something.
No, I think.
Because if not, what's the
right?
What's the point of finding the angle of the of the path?
Yeah.
The second thing is that if I want to consider third order terms here, There's a problem, right?
There's a problem? Why?
No. I just thought that you were considering the third term has some f prime, the third derivative of f, but no.
No.
It could happen that, for example, I have a function that has a critical point and its second derivative is also zero.
Yes. Right. Then this analysis is not directly applicable. You'd have to modify the derivation and keep track of the third order term. But then you're left with integrals that aren't Gaussian integrals. So it's difficult to apply it in that case.
OK, and the second thing, I was lost, the third thing, I guess. I get lost when you choose the minus 5/4 instead of the 3/4 as the pattern.
Oh.
That's due to the orientation of the?
That's due to the orientation of this integral.
Okay.
So just global considerations.
All right.
Three pi by 4 would go out that way, is that what you're saying?
That's right. So it would just be
a ray going out.
Yeah, if we reversed the direction they were integrating along this contour,
yeah,
then we would choose the other angle. OK. Any other questions? So in these last four lectures, I've gone through what I think are some of the most important properties of special functions and distributions, learned some techniques, and I hope they'll serve you well throughout the year. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay. I had a question. I'm just kind of confused about, I guess, I think you might have raised already, but if you're at a critical point, aren't both grad u and grad v zero? So what do you mean by grad
yes.
u is tangent to t?
What I meant there was near the critical point. So at the critical point, they're both zero.
Oh, I see.
Near the critical point, we want the real part to be changing as quickly as possible and the imaginary part to be constant.
I don't see why are we not considering the third order derivative for g?
The third order derivative?
Because it's an odd integral.
Uh-huh.
Yes. So it's the same reason we don't consider the first order. So even though it could be present in the Taylor expansion of g, after we do an integral of, say, t e to the minus t with some coefficients, that's zero by symmetry.
But what if, so we're leaving out terms in the expansion for f, the higher order terms.
Mm-hmm.
But if you had linear terms in the expansion of f, for f and the linear term in the expansion for g, would they not together make a quadratic term that would still work?
But you don't have linear term because you are in the critical point. So the derivative is zero.
But it's third?
Third order.
Right.
Third order.
So I've been neglecting all of the f, third derivative of f terms. In principle, yeah, that there could be first derivatives
but
of g that show up.
Later.
Yeah. So usually you can go to fairly high order in G before you need to consider a third order in F. So it's not.
Wasn't F growing faster than G?
No.
F grows faster.
E to the F grows faster.
E to the okay.
Yes.
So is it obvious that these series satisfy all the defining requirements you put for an asymptotic series, or is that still something that remains?
It's not immediately obvious from what I've presented here, but it is true.
Okay. So is that something that needs to be shown? These are actually asymptotic series.
That's right.
Okay.
So I'm just not another question going back to the asymptotic series when we defined it. It seems like the way that we wrote it down, if you just take the finite part of the asymptotic series, let's say like the first n terms, that equals to the first n terms of the Fourier series. Is that not true then?
Some asymptotic series are also convergent series, but not all asymptotic series are convergent series.
Well, I guess in the, just in that particular example, like if we just wanted to compute it to like the fourth, like the tenth term in the Fourier series, or in the expanded out, then we would have a finite sum, and we would have no problem moving it outside of the integral.
Right. Right.
But the Fourier series is convergent.
Right. So I guess my question is like, I guess like I would expect to be able to show that the first, like for the finite part of the asymptotic series is equal to the finite part of the Fourier series.
You mean if we just take the first n terms of both?
Yeah, because then you don't have any problem moving it outside of the integral.
So we can come up with. Examples where that's true, but so yeah, in particular, if you're just the problem is that the first n terms, you can't say if a series is convergent or asymptotic if you only have the first n terms, right? So both our definition of a convergent series and our definition of the asymptotic series are statements about what happens as n goes to infinity. So
it's not a valid comparison if you're only
convergent
with 10 terms.
The fact that it works for n finite doesn't imply that it would work for n infinite. Actually, there are examples where you have non-convergent series that just by modifying how you sum terms, you can get different answers. So
I'm not sure if that answered your question.
Right, no, I guess I'll just play around with the mathematical later and see if it's
okay. I'd be happy to discuss it more with you later as well.
What was it?
You said before that when you're computing one of these asymptotic series, there's some optimal number of terms. You know?
Yes.
Is there some general way to work it out?
Generally, the terms will decrease up to some point and then start increasing. So usually you just take keep taking terms until they start getting bigger.
So you can find critical points for the asymptotic expansion and then where it starts increasing again.
Right, so then there's no point in taking more terms for most practical applications.
Where do we use these?
All the time, if you're computing a perturbative, doing a perturbative calculation in quantum field theory, or you're computing as an asymptotic series, not a convergent series.
Why not just like take delta x and then just expand to a Taylor expansion? And is it?
Well, it's really because we don't know how to proceed further in quantum field theory. We have integrals very similar to the one we started with.
Okay.
This is a technique that we know how to use.
Okay.